This is the Cubs Related Podcast. Tonight is July 16th. The Chicago Cubs just swept the Baltimore Orioles, their first sweep on the road this season, their first three-game winning streak in almost a month. And so now they're 4.5 back from the Milwaukee Brewers, their first place. They're 6.5 back of the Arizona Diamondbacks in the wild card, and 5.5 back of the Colorado Rockies in the wild card. Now, I'd rather not have to focus on the wild card, but here we are in the middle of July, and I'm reading off these stats. So with me is Corey. Corey, what do you got?
Well, so I think a necessary qualifier that we're both well aware of, that, you know, today was against Ubaldo Jimenez, and the entire weekend was against a, you know, much maligned Baltimore Oriole pitching staff. But Brendan, I think we got to do it. I think we have to put the rest of the National League, probably the rest of Major League Baseball, you know, you've been put on notice by the Chicago Cubs. They took that break, they rested, and, you know, they kind of look like they remembered how to play baseball, Brendan.
Wow, that's a pretty bold take from you. It's only three games, even though, like you said, against three of bottom tier pitchers in the league.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, it's partially in jest. I think most
but
of
not
us,
really.
Yeah, no, I in jest in the sense that, like, yes, it's three games, and we've seen them play good for short spurts, you know, and then turn it right around the other way all year, but. You know, I think this goes back to what we were talking about, you know, kind of on the midseason, you know, recap and, you know, looking forward. We knew this team had a lot of talent in it and that they were not going to play like that for the entire year, or it would have just been, you know, very surprising had it turned out that way. So, you know, winning three games against the Baltimore Orioles doesn't, you know, immediately turn everything around and, you know, now we should just flip the way, you know, we've been thinking about everything. But, you know, we knew this team was capable of this. So to see it, you know, and you're getting multiple guys going at once, which is sort of the biggest problem that we were having in the first half with so many guys not going all at once. And yeah, so, you know, look, like three games against the Orioles, I'm not sitting here going, oh, well, now we're better than the Dodgers, you know, like, or whatever. But you know, you watch a team play like this for 3 days, you watch the offense play like this, getting contributions from all parts of the lineup, getting really good pitching, for most of the series. And, you know, I think you're definitely inclined to be like, okay, like I have seen this before. I like where this is going. And if we can sustain anything close to this, you know, yeah, I would be a little concerned if I were other teams in this league, especially, as you mentioned, the teams that are, you know, kind of hanging on to playoff spots by a thread in the wild card coming out of the NL West. And, you know, the Brewers, you know, they lose the game today, 4.5 now. And I think they play each other like 10 more times, you know. Yeah. So if I was a Milwaukee Brewer, I, you know, I might be hearing some footsteps right now. And I guess what I'm saying is those footsteps are a little scary when you watch the Cubs play like this.
Right. And the projected win-loss record as it stands, even before the game's finished today, the Cubs, despite all their struggles, are still projected to win the division with 87 wins. And the Brewers are only projected to have 84 wins. So in reality, the way this thing is turning out, 85 wins or so should be enough to win the Central. Again, those projections change. Pittsburgh has been playing pretty well lately, and they get Starling and Marte back too. So it's not as if the entire Central is fully established yet, in my opinion. So, I mean, it's July 16th. I feel like because we haven't been involved in this type of late season, and it's not even late season, which is the point I'm kind of trying to make, even like mid-season races like this, I mean, I cannot remember the last time I closely watched a Milwaukee Brewer game against the Philadelphia Phillies that was meaningful.
Oh, it's been a while.
It's been a while, and
yeah,
it's only July 16th. So I think, I guess, from maybe I'm more talking to myself, but if the Cubs play the way they're supposed to play, scoreboard watching is not going to mean anything. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to have to watch these games and, like, you know, hope that the Philadelphia Phillies beat the Milwaukee Brewers. They keep playing the way they're doing. It's just all going to work out. And
well, and July 16th. Yeah, and we've had, you know, the up and down roller coaster so far this season that I think the real focus for me this weekend, it's easy to, you know, check the box where you want to make up those games. And, you know, when you're winning, you want to be getting a little more for it. But definitely I was inclined to, just like you're saying, like put blinders on, basically just like we've screwed around enough that let's just take care of business, win our games, and the rest either takes care of itself or it doesn't. But, you know, like there's nothing we can do about that. But Brendan, can we make a deal, you and I?
It depends.
On air right now.
I don't know.
Can we be done ever being at 500 for the rest of the year? We're over today. We're a game over. Right now, you and me, we're going to lock it in for all of, you know, Cubdom. That's it. We're over 500. We're done with that.
I can make that deal. We can handshake on it next time we see one another. That is it.
Yeah.
But so this podcast, we'll talk about that Orioles series in more detail and then some of the highlight performances, which there are many, which is encouraging. And then obviously go into the Jose Quintana performance and some of the details of the upcoming opponents. So, Cor, do you have the review in front of you for that Baltimore series?
Yes.
Okay,
so a rather interesting start to this series as the Cubs come out of the All-Star break. Hot AF, Brendan. they go up 8-0 in Friday's game. And I think many of our brethren on Twitter were feeling very good. We got Wilson Contreras starting things off in that first inning, and then Kyle Schwarber going back-to-back, which I think if there was anything that, like, straight out of the gate in the first inning of the second half, Schwarber hitting a home run was basically as like, much of go. A, like, okay, like, yes, you know, like, all right, we're back, like, great. So that was great, the whole going up 8-0 thing. And in that game, Contreras homering, Schwarber homering, Zobrist homering, which was good to see, you know, given that he's only recently back from his wrist situation. Jason Hayward homering in that game, who we'll get into in a bit, but had a wonderful series after Brendan and I, express concern. I don't know. We don't put anybody on blast unless it's John Lackey.
True for us.
But so we'll get into that. The unfortunate side to that is Mike Montgomery could not really dial it in to stay in this game long enough to really protect an 8-run lead, which is not something you want to hear. He goes 4 1/3, 5 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 each in the walk and strikeout column. Was a good outing, you know, until about, I think, the third, and then it just, you know, sort of slowly derailed from there. Justin Grimm comes in, and things do not go well for him either. 2/3 of an inning in this game for Justin Grimm. 3 hits, 2 earned runs, a walk and a strikeout each. And then, so Strope, Dunsing, and Edwards get us through to the eighth, where Koji Uehara records a blown save, gives up a 2-run home run to Mark Trumbo, and just like that, we have an 8-8 ball game. I was actually listening to, I watched the good portion of this game on TV, then had to get in the car to drive down to your neck of the woods, Brendan.
Yeah.
And I listened to the bad portion of the game. And while it was, you know, slowly happening, it's, you know, it's 8-6 after 5 innings. They score 4 in the bottom of the 5th inning. And you're thinking, like, man, as quickly as you were thinking to yourself, okay, I like a lot of this. Just like I was saying, like Schwarber hitting a home run, Hayward hitting a home run, like the offense coming out of the gate, you know, with this big lead. that felt pretty bad. That an 8-run lead is pretty much inexcusable to blow, and it kind of felt like, wow, like this really just is how this season is going to be, right?
So
a really, really drastic 180 in this game. But in the top of the ninth, the kid, Addison Russell, drives a ball that gives the Cubs a 9-8 lead
that Wade Davis
was not going to relinquish. He also helped by a phenomenal play by Jason Hayward that originally on the broadcast is, you know, sort of just like a magic trick. He just disappears and comes out with the ball in that right field corner. And so the Cubs win this one. And, you know, hard to say, you know, I think you and I try to steer clear of narratives as much as we can. But you got a feeling if they blow that one, that has some bad potential for just a way to start this second half. And just to erase whatever good feeling the offense had created for itself during that game, that would have been a pretty bad one to not end up winning. So thank you to Addison Russell for saving us that. Also for saving us from what would have been nuclear takes on the I mean, you would have had the worst articles, tweets, everything written about the Cubs after that game. Hoo boy.
Is the Cubs dynasty over? My column, Chicago Sun-Times.
Yeah, it died tonight in Baltimore. So the Cubs win that one. And on Saturday, it was Jake Arrieta and Wade Miley. The Cubs win this one 10-3, the offense, again, as it was the entire series, just coming out hot. Albert Almora Jr. getting the offense started with a home run. Anthony Rizzo homering in this game. Chris Bryant, 3-for-5. Wilson Contreras, 3-for-5. Jason Hayward, 2-for-4 with 3 RBIs. Javi Baez, 3-for-4 with 2 RBIs. This was a sort of what the game on Friday looked like it was going to be, except that Jake Arrieta, Hector Rondon, and your boy, Brendan, Eddie Butler, keep the Baltimore offense in check. Jake Arrieta, in his first outing in Baltimore since being traded as a Chicago Cub, he goes 6 2/3, allowing 4 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. And I think pause here because I thought Jake Arrieta looked really good in this game.
I thought it was his best start of the year, honestly. I say that maybe not the best start, but it was up there. The whiffs were down, but if you were watching that game, it was almost like every other pitch he was darting that lower outside corner of the plate, yeah, that backdoor two-seamer. He threw, I think, in the upper 60s, maybe low 70s, he threw a ton of two-seamers that game. And in the post-game conference, he was saying how he basically only had 2 pitches that night. And he showed enough of the cutter, he showed enough of the changeup to get by. So that's encouraging. So Jake Arrieta goes, what was it, 7 innings? With
6 2/3.
6 2/3. And he didn't have his best stuff, but that's what we're talking about. When you can dial in that command, even with decreased velocity, even with the secondary offerings not working, he has enough of that funky arm angle and he gets enough grounders and weak contact to get by. Like, that is exactly what you want to see. And so if you can actually get his slider back and going and continue this increased trend of an effective changeup, I mean, I feel much more comfortable with this version of Arrieta than last year's. Last year's was way too volatile for me, and I feel like he's fixed a lot of that. So, I mean, it is, for me, it is probably one of the most encouraging, most fun starts to watch from Jake this year.
Yeah, I thought he looked very good, and I think you could tell early on. You know, granted, we still had some erraticness, you know, throughout the game, but I think especially early on, it was a couple of those early at-bats where you could see that he was just missing, but it really did look like he had a feel for those pitches, a feel for the zone. And, you know, when he's able to nip a little bit like that, you know, it bodes well because it you know, like you're saying, I think the difference last year was it kind of looked all over the place for the majority of the game. But this looked like you know, even on some of the misses, like, okay, no, he's right there. Like, mm-hmm. he looks good. He's on this. He's feeling this. So that was a good one. Again, the Cubs win 10-3. So by Saturday, they've won this series. And as I tweeted out after that game, Len Casper left us with a, you know, at least for me, a sort of chill-inducing sentence to finish this Saturday game, which was, you know, we're back on Sunday. The Cubs go for the sweep with Jose Quintana on the mound. And Brendan, whew, I don't know about you, but I needed to, you know,
cool myself down.
I needed to cool myself down after this one, because this was, you know, Jose Quintana is a guy who we have been hearing about for a while, because, you know, as has been kind of much talked about and written about in the last, you know, since this trade, always made sense for the Chicago Cubs. The age, the contract, you know, where he fits in a rotation, everything. It just made sense. And to finally see him in the uniform was a bit surreal. But boy, did Jose Quintana deliver. 7 innings, 3 hits. He was throwing a no-hitter, I believe, into the fourth or fifth inning. 0 runs, 0 walks, and a season-high 12 strikeouts. This was, you know, I think in the category of Javi Baez laying down tags, John Lester pitching on the edges, Wilson Contreras throwing people out, this was, I think, in the category of baseball pornography, Brendan.
I mean, 12 strikeouts. That's got to be the most for a Cubs starter this year, if not tied for the most. I think it was Sadiv. I think he mentioned that this may have been the best Cubs start of the year by Play Index. I forgot what the score was, but it's got to be the best start, I think, for, in my opinion, in my eyes, and given the context, and certainly we have the game scores to back this up, got to be the best Cubs start we've seen. I mean, and what a treat that we're going to get someone like this to complement Hendricks and then Lester for the next 3.5 seasons.
Right.
Like, I just want to take a second to really reflect on that. This team is such in a healthy position right now that...
Yeah, which is amazing.
It's amazing.
Like, to think about the rotation and how... And now, granted, like, it's not perfect, right? There's still stuff to discuss, and we need some of these guys to, you know, really dial it in for this second half. But to think about all the ways we've discussed this rotation throughout the year, to now have Quintana... And to have him pitch like that, I mean, what a drastic change in just the overall outlook of that situation.
Yeah. At first, when I found out about the trade, and we talked about it with Evan, but it came as a shock, not only because it was with the White Sox, but I think anytime you trade a prospect like the prominence of an Eloy Jimenez, it kind of hits you at first like, oh, my God, like, whoa, this is big. But trading someone like Eloy Jimenez for a pitcher like this is a no-brainer for this team. It's an absolute no-brainer. And to see it work out, I know it's only been one start, but you can already imagine a scenario in this half and then in seasons going forward where Theo can have a ton of flexibility to make other moves because, one, Quintana's contract is so favorable, and two, because really, you know, you solidify a role in your rotation and you can expend your resources elsewhere, whether it's the bullpen, whether it's even getting a pitcher that has maybe more of a higher ceiling, but he has a lower floor. So that, putting that aside and just focusing on this particular game, today's game, best case scenario, right? Almost perfect game from all facets, defensively, pitching, hitting. Schwarber hit another homer today, right? I mean, KB hit a shot in left field bleachers.
No.
What?
Kyle Schwarber did not hit a homer today.
Okay,
he doubled.
Sorry.
He just missed it.
Okay. In my mind, he hit a homer because yeah. You're right, though. It was double. But it was almost like a replicate of his, of the
yes,
first
it was
game.
Almost, yeah, it was
yeah,
almost
so I got
like
that confused. Okay, so he had a double off the wall, right? But, I mean, you had KB going yard. You're still getting good at bats from Addy. overall, I mean, a picture perfect series. There's really no areas that we're going into Atlanta having to stress about. And I think, you know, there's so many different players we can focus on. But the highlight, Corey, has to be Wilson Contreras. My God, right?
And a really insane series for Wilson Contreras here.
Locked in. I know we wrote about it on Cubs Insider with some of the mechanical changes that he made, this miniature toe tap. But I can't recall a time this year where any Cub hitter has been that locked in, right? Maybe that one Rizzo stretch when he went to the leadoff role, but it's almost like every single pitch that Wilson is getting thrown is dialed in.
Yeah.
It's a sight to see. And having him really take advantage of that fourth cleanup spot is huge for this team, especially when KV slumps or Rizzo slumps, having that extra guy to protect them. It's huge. So what a difference a week makes, right? I mean, your perspective on the season and the team in general is just, from my point of view, dramatically changed.
Yeah, and just to run through that real quick, Wilson this weekend on Friday, 1-for-4 with a homer and 3 RBIs. On Saturday, 3-for-5 with another RBI. And then, of course, today, 4-for-5. So, yowza. And you know, I was saying to you that it, you know, he makes me look like a real genius. And, you know, obviously I wasn't the first person to say that. But, you know, when we were doing the mid-season stuff, you know, I said that it was one of my more pleasant surprises or positives on the year that he's sort of just developing into your future catcher and, a really solid offensive catcher and, you know, still growing in different facets in terms of the framing and blocking, but combined with his cannon of an arm, it just is very exciting to see him really thriving in this role, especially after Montero no longer with the team. You know, he's the veteran catching presence on this team. So, you know, and then that was before this series. And then he comes out in this series. I was laughing during some of these games. I mean, he was squaring everything up. Every ball he was putting was seemingly perfectly placed, driving the ball to the alleys, you know, showing his power. It was a very exciting series. And like you said, it is very important that somebody is able to lock down that cleanup spot, you know, and it allows someone like Schwarber, someone like Happ to find a less, you know, I don't want to say, you know, less important, but, you know,
no, just, I'm following you.
Yeah, it allows them to just sort of be somewhere else in the lineup, like,
but you know,
not
what the
as
most
much
important,
scrutiny, you know?
Yeah, you know what the most important part of that, though, is? I mean, the whole psychological and emotional perspective is totally justified, but the fact that when you put Rizzo, Bryant, and now another key piece in Contreras in front of those guys, you're giving Happ and you're giving Schwarber more chances to hit with men on base. So what does that do? It eliminates the shift, one, for Schwarber, and two, it puts those pitchers in very vulnerable positions in which they have to pitch out of the stretch. So now you're giving more of an advantage for Schwarber and for Happ to succeed. And that is the most significant thing. And I think from KB's perspective, he was walking around, and he still is, around a 15% rate, which is almost 50% greater than last season. And clearly the fact that no one's been behind KV has more or less influenced pitchers to just not pitch to him. And I mean, he's been great this year in total, but at some point it has to kind of mess with you. So it's just good overall. I think Wilson hitting like this is really instrumental in the Cubs' future success. And And before we move on, I just want to point out, too, going into the year, I think Wilson was probably my biggest concern, which has diminished quite a bit, obviously. But I was concerned about the contact rate and kind of the aggressive approach because he didn't really show signs of enormous power in the minors. Like, right? So I think once he was able to get these 250, 300 plate appearances – still shows signs of power, even though he's making less contact, now you're changing the projections for the guy. And I think we can be more comfortable going forward with his contact because we know with great certainty that the power is indeed for real. So, I mean, like I said, what a difference a few days makes. But kudos to Contreras. I think we need to appreciate really what he's done, how he's adjusted, how he's handling the staff. I mean, he's turning into one of my favorite players to watch.
So absolutely.
It's
been, well, and just to update this again, I think we did this last time, but now on 2017, Wilson, a .278 batting average, .340 on base percentage, .483 slugging percentage, a .348 weighted on base average, and a .113 weighted runs created. That's, you know, one of the better hitting catchers in the game is what you're looking at right now. So that's very exciting, you know, and to your point about him being one of the more fun guys to watch, you know, when you couple this type of performance with the type of character he has and then and energy he brings to the team, yeah, I mean, this is a guy who is, I think, you know, vaunting himself up the ladder in terms of, you know, some of these more popular Cubs. He keeps this up, and I certainly think he'll get there. And we also did get, if you didn't see it, I believe it's on the Cubs Twitter, we did get a nice gif of him and Jose Quintana hugging in the dugout after this one. So if you need to get that feel spot for the evening, that should do it for you.
And the Cubs did give Quintana a water shower, or more probably an alcohol-type beverage shower. But that was kind of cool to see how the Cubs players have embraced him so quickly.
Well, and he seems, you know, absolutely thrilled to be on a team that's contending for the playoffs. And, you know, I think anybody listening to us knows that we're not like I couldn't care less about the White Sox. I believe you're the same way, Brendan. So, you know, this is nothing at all like against the White Sox or jabs at the White Sox. Cause we just don't care. We don't play them. We're not in their division, like whatever, do your thing. Right.
Yeah.
But you know, he said it in all the quotes I've read from the various beat writers that have talked to Quintana, and, you know, and just the messages he's posted on social media. He just seems absolutely thrilled to be pitching in games that he knows are meaningful and have, you know, real value. And to just, you know, be a part of a team that is focused on and dialed in towards winning another championship. And you can just tell that. And it's fun. It's fun to watch. You know, these guys, they definitely felt like they had a little bit of their swagger back this weekend. And, you know, again, three games in Baltimore, a season does not make. But I think everybody feeling better, everything looks better. You know, now you're going to play Atlanta, who surprisingly is .500. This is not, you know, exactly the cakewalk that I think we've become accustomed to when heading to Atlanta in the last few years. But, you know, this is two, you know, not great teams back to back. And you're just, you know, as we've said before, hoping the Cubs can ride this success. But it definitely feels different. And, you know, we'll see how it is going forward. But this weekend definitely did feel, to quote my good friend Pat Hughes, this weekend felt like a real turning point, Ron.
We said that in the second inning of the first game on Friday.
He always said that. It's my favorite. I mean, and you always know. It's like bases loaded early in the game. Like, you know, Ron, it feels like a real turning point.
Even though it's in the second inning there.
Yes, it does, Pat. So the other thing that we have to do, and you know we're quick to do it, you know where I'm going.
I
yeah.
Know where you're going.
As if on cue, as we, Brendan and I both expressed concern with, the way his offense was shaping out, Jason Hayward has what I would guess is his best weekend as a Chicago Cub in Baltimore.
His best hits as a Chicago Cub too. I mean, from up here.
Yeah. So,
thank God. I guess that's the first.
Yeah,
thing
I mean, look, and you know, I don't know, I don't remember where those numbers were the other day, but you know, I know you were mentioning. I think his WOBA went up like 20 points. He's almost at league average in terms of weighted runs created. you know, back around a 265 batting average, safely over, you know, a 700 OPS now, which is crazy. I mean, you know, it was just, you know, and I think to be fair to us, Brendan, we have always been supportive of Jason.
I love Hayward.
Yeah, well, and I think even in that last show where we were expressing concern, I think I at least for sure mentioned that, you know, sometimes these changes take time and, you know, it's not necessarily something that is going to turn around in, you know, 3 months of playing. But definitely you and I have a little bit of, and, you know, granted, again, only three games in Baltimore, but that was a pretty quick job by Jason to shut us up there.
Yeah, it was almost literally on cue too, because once Schwarber hit that homer in the Friday game, I think I messaged you and Evan like, "Oh, look, Schwarber has a better wOBA than Jason Hayward does now." And then, like within a period of 72 hours, he goes and hits like what, six base knocks. His wOBA is now 320. It's kind of within the margin of error of his entire career line, and you're looking at a potential 4 to 5 win player. If, of course, he continues something like this. It is only 3
games.
Well, and
doing his thing in the field,
yeah,
and
exactly.
On the base paths.
Yeah,
that was all on full display there.
Yeah, and then I don't know if I did a good job of explaining why, at least I was concerned, but the main argument that I've seen in the past is that Hayward's exit velocity is very good, despite the struggles. And over time, people have said that his BABIP should go up because it is low. It's lower than his career norm. And so people think his BABIP should go up, and he's been more or less the victim of bad luck. And that isn't true. That's not true. His BABIP, even though it's lower, was a direct result of his inability to hit the ball in the air with authority. And so this is a good lead up to why we can actually appreciate this series. And this is why I'm bringing this up now. So Hayward's exit velocity on fly balls this year is 85 miles per hour, 5 miles per hour lower than the league average. Last year, it was 86 miles per hour, 4 miles per hour lower than the league average. His year in St. Louis, it was right at the league average mark. So one of the reasons why he was so successful as a Cardinal is because he was hitting the ball in the air, one, more frequently, and two, with more authority. So look, it's great if you're going to hit that ball 100 miles per hour, but if it's right on the ground at the second baseman, you're not going to get a double off of it. You're not going to get a triple off it. So the fact that we were able to see line drives in the gaps, fly balls over the center field, over the center fielder's head, homers that were crossing, what was that street called in Baltimore? Starts with a U? I forgot what it's called. Anyway,
yeah.
He like one-hopped the warehouse, whatever it was. So when we see signs like this, it kind of signals to me like, oh, like crap, like this is great. Like if Hayward went in the series and had a, you know, 5 or 6 base hits based on some liners up the middle on a low plane, I would have been like, okay, let's just see him hit the ball further. And he did that like consistently. And that's the first time I've seen him do that as a Cub. That's remarkable. That's very encouraging.
Yeah, it just, again, he looked better this weekend, and, you know, hard to deny. I mean, he was roping the ball, he was lining the ball well. That homer he hit was a really well-struck ball. And, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, this has been, it's sort of the same thing with him all the time. You know, if he can sustain anything close to this, he's such an elite player in those other aspects of the game that it's never really been hard to see why he's worth the money he gets or why he is even considered for that. It's just a matter of him being consistent at the plate. And, mm-hmm. You know, hopefully whatever was, you know, the little differences this weekend is something that he can build on. But, you know, another thing too with him is just, and it always has been, but really fun to watch him do well. When he hit that ball, the bases clearing double in Saturday's game.
Triple, right. No,
triple,
was it a double?
Yes.
It was triple.
I don't recall. Yeah. He cleared the bases, wherever he ended up. But the camera had a really good shot of him running to first and, you know, mouthing, saying to himself, get up, ball. And, you know, it just like, it's just, you know, for the better portion of his time with the Cubs, you know, it's been more of a struggle at the plate. So to see him not only striking the ball well, but kind of, you know, feeling himself a little bit right at the plate, is fun. And again, a total 180 this weekend. This whole series was basically completely different than the rest of the year. And, you know, look, let's be honest. Brendan and I only said anything bad about Hayward because we knew he'd turn it around as soon as we did.
Well, he listened to our podcast, so we're presenting him.
Yeah, really everybody should be thanking us rather than, us eating crow. But, I mean, I don't know that there is really much else.
I mean, Addison played well. It's just worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. He had two homers, hitting the gaps, had a couple lineouts. Madden described his at-bats as fabulous, I believe, was the quote. That's another one to mention. The shoulder injuries have been concerned.
I don't know about you, but I didn't find myself, being sort of disgusted by his swings this weekend.
He looks great.
Which I think is the real thing. It's like, I don't know what the deal was or why that was happening. We've already discussed many of the potential reasons and all that. But early in the year, he was just taking at bats where you were like, ugh, like that just doesn't look good. And, he's never going to be, nobody's expecting him to be, the best hitter in the league or a, 320 hitter or something like that. But those kind of ugly swings we had not seen and we're definitely kind of giving everybody pause. And, I think this weekend was definitely what you were hoping to see where, not perfect, and he, didn't have a good day today, but you weren't seeing those swings where you're kind of like wincing almost, like, ugh, what was that?
Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because he's healthier, who knows, but let's see what else. I mean, Zobrist, again, hitting a homer, you want to see that because of the wrist injury, so that was encouraging. The thing with Baez, and then maybe this is the last player we can mention unless I'm forgetting someone, but Baez had, what, three hits in Saturday's game, right? Three or four hits, whatever it
was.
Yes,
3 for 5.
Okay, 3 for 5. And, I mean, Baez is one of those.
3 for 4, sorry.
3 for 4, okay. And he had, I think it was his last hit. It was 2 strikes, and I know we've talked about it, but it drives me insane. Is he had that base hit up the middle with 2 strikes. He shortens up. He closes his stance. He picks up his foot, puts it down. He eliminates the big leg kick. I would love to see that more going forward. And at times for me, it's like I have to ask myself, is he just up there like literally guessing at the pitch? I mean, there's a few fastballs over the middle of the plate where sometimes he takes a huge leg stride at, and he just doesn't locate. He just lets it go right past him. So I feel as if he's able to recognize the pitchers better when he shortens up that stride. And I would hope he continues to do that more in situations that don't call for shortening up his approach, maybe on like a few one strike counts. I don't know, but that's just, it's bugging me. I just wanted to say that I want Baez to just shorten up a little bit more, because I feel like he's on the cusp of being a really valuable 3-4 win player on a consistent basis. He's so close.
Yeah. I feel that. But yeah, I mean, beyond that, I this series basically couldn't have gone better, and we'll see what they parlay it into. But really, the whole lineup hitting, the defense looked a lot better this weekend. Chris Bryant, by the way, I think worth mentioning. I feel like he's definitely underrated for how good he is defensively, but he had an incredible defensive series this weekend. And, he was just a couple inches on a bad throw yesterday from making an insane play on a slow bouncer that he came in on. But he made a great diving stop in yesterday's game and, was just really flashing the leather all over the place, which I think is something for him that he definitely doesn't get a lot of credit for, as there's a lot of really good defensive third basemen in this league. But Chris Bryant is not just an offensive player. And I know, I think Cubs fans know that, but it just feels like something that doesn't get brought up enough. And I, for whatever reason, this series, he just seemed on full display.
There's a few plays, one in the first game to his backhand side, where he reaches over and throws like a one hopper to Rizzo. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal play. Another play to his glove hand side, where he rolls over a little bit, and I think he starts to turn a double play, just Baez doesn't end up throwing it, which was the right decision. So, this entire series encapsulates what made the Cubs last year successful. Timely pitching, good defense, and you take away the first game of the bullpen, I know. But overall, as a unit, the bats were great. They dug every single Oriole starter into the ground early on. I don't think any of them went more than four innings, right, Corey? At least no more than five innings.
Let's see. Miley, 4 2/3. Ubaldo, 3 2/3. And on Friday, Kevin Gausman, 3. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember how many times you and I had to try to find a way to somehow value how quickly the Cubs get out the opposing team starter. Remember that from last year? And so it was a thing where they, even though they didn't sometimes hit the particular pitcher hard, they just ran him right into the ground and they were able to get to the bullpen faster. So again, you take away the first game blown lead, and this was the most perfect thing you could have asked for coming out of the break. And when you throw in Quintana into the mix, you have to be feeling good going into the Atlanta Braves on tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take a quick look at that series. This will be the Cubs' first visit to SunTrust Park, I think is the name. Yes, SunTrust Park. In Cobb County, no longer playing at Turner Field, the Atlanta Braves, and a good matchup tomorrow featuring another, name who we sort of heard and envisioned as a Chicago Cub for quite some time, and Julio Teheran going for the Atlanta Braves. He's a righty against big, bad John Lester, who I imagine is itching to get that 10-run performance taste out of his mouth. That game is at 6:35 Central on Monday, tomorrow night. And Tuesday, it'll be John Lackey against left-hander Sean Newcomb. And Wednesday, Sean Newcomb.
Yeah. I don't know, Newcomb. I don't know why I chuckled at that, like a nuke. Anyway, continue.
All right. Wednesday's game is at 11:10 Central. Brendan, that's that is straight up a 9 o'clock start for those of us.
Oh my god!
According to Cubs.com, we have an 11 a.m. Central start. So yikes for me. Gonna have to watch that one on delay.
that's ridiculous.
And that'll be Mike Montgomery against the knuckleballing veteran R.A. Dickey. So a quick three in Atlanta. And I don't know, Brendan, any particular thoughts there?
Tehran's good. I know the numbers don't show it, but, I mean, heavy slider, heavy fastball. Like you said, Cubs have been connected to him in the past just because of the cost control ability. And who knows, maybe he even becomes a target Theo goes after in the next few weeks. So I think after the first game, which might be a challenge, like I said, even though he's been pitching poorly this year, you should beat Newcomb. You should beat Dickey. And it's not hard to envision another sweep before you go on and face St. Louis over the weekend. So the one area, I guess, to look out for, I mean, there's several you can pick, but you still want to see Schwarber settle down and continue to really own in on the changes he's made in Iowa. I know he struck out a few more times in the finale of the Baltimore series. He struck out a few times in the first game of the Baltimore series. So even though he's showing signs of really taking the ball to the opposite field with authority, which is what you want to see, you're just hoping that maybe he connects to pieces just a little bit more because you feel like he's so close to doing it. But, I mean, I feel great. I think we all should feel great, right? But other than Schwarber, I mean, do you have anything that you're keeping an eye on?
No, I mean, not really. I'm sort of just going to, I think put that first half behind us. They played really well in this new season, if you will. And I'm hoping that they just build on it. I mean, I think, we're still waiting for Hendricks's eventual return. And, you know, I think especially with the outing on Friday, you would assume that that'll be Mike Montgomery going back to the pen. But, you know, that Montgomery Lackey situation, I guess, is something to monitor. This will also be Lackey's first start, I believe, since what did he go on the DL for? Plantar fasciitis?
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see how that's going.
Hendricks should be back soon, by the way. We didn't mention him this episode.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, like I said, it definitely felt like they had a little bit of their swagger back this weekend. Everybody kind of looking good. And, you know, we'll just have to hope that this is not something limited to Camden Yards and guys like Ubaldo Jimenez. But, you know, and it was nice, and especially just in a season where we faced guys like that, you know, throughout this year where you're thinking, oh, come on, you know, we got to hit this guy. And so, you know, for all the, I think the people who will be quick to say, well, it's just three games, you know, against a bad team. It's like, well, you know, this is what they should be doing. You know, if we're going to get on them for not capitalizing on bad pitching or bad teams, you know, we don't have to, you know, throw a party for them, but, you know, give them credit for doing, they went to Baltimore, they took care of business, you know? So,
yeah,
that's what they should be doing. That's not something that we were seeing with consistency throughout this year. You know, maybe throw out a certain series in San Diego if you, you know, need a reminder of that.
Or LA.
But, you know, yeah, and, you know, like you said, you know, you've got the Cardinals coming up. You're going to be getting into some pretty serious games with the Brewers eventually. And, you know, the Braves playing better. They're at 500. And if they happen to win the series, they would have a better record than the Cubs, which is not something that I thought was going to be possible. But, you know, you want to go down to Atlanta and pick up two. And I think, you know, I think John will get us started tomorrow and, you know, keep going on this little winning streak we got here.
Yep. This has been the Cubs Related Podcast. You can find this podcast on iTunes by searching Cubs Related in iTunes. You can also click subscribe on the Cubs Insider link if you found this podcast through that link. And please like, subscribe, tell your friends about this podcast. It certainly helps. And once the Cubs finish that 9:10 a.m. Central game on Wednesday, Corey and I will podcast, review the Braves series, preview the Cardinals series. And until then, enjoy this sweep.